Welcome to Refirement Life, the podcast for anyone navigating life transitions or planning to make life transitions to ensure your next years are your best years. Listen in for insightful, generous, and sometimes humorous conversation. It's time to get fired up with Christine Zamuda and Muge Wood, your hosts for this latest episode of Refirement Life.
Hello, everyone. Muge Wood with my amazing co-host, Christine Zamuda. Today, we are very excited to bring you our episode number 39 that will focus on what we can learn from jazz to embrace an improvisational mindset for greater innovation. That is a lot, but we'll break it down for you. And it is about how we can drive even more rewarding innovation and leadership by unlearning all the time, as inspired by jazz. This idea actually was brought to us by one of my amazing co-workers who is a jazz fan, and I saw this article in Harvard Business Review published by Dr. Frank Barrett, and Christine and I were very impressed and inspired by the parallels between jazz and improvisational leadership. So we are going to dig into this today, and I hope you enjoy the ride. Before we do so, let's talk about reflections from the past couple weeks. Christine, what have you been up to?
I guess what's fresh off my mind is just having a non-traditional Easter weekend. So
that's not good.
I guess the good news was I didn't eat a ton of candy. And although my husband, who is 56 years old, still got an Easter basket from my sister-in-law. It's a tradition. He's the baby of the family. And apparently it's going to go on forever.
Okay, I have a lot of questions about that. Yes. Like, what is in the basket? Was his name engraved on
it? His name was engraved. Lots of candy, all kinds of sweets, all of his favorite stuff. Nothing that's adult, though. Like, nothing.
that is awesome. I absolutely love it.
A 57-year-old would need. Or 56. Yeah. Yeah. So that was that. We were separated for the weekend. I traveled to Chicago. My niece was in a volleyball tournament and I met her and my sister there in Chicago. My daughter came over, drove in from Michigan. So the four of us had a really great time watching her compete. They did a phenomenal job. It was the first time they were in this higher level tournament, and they actually won a bid to the Junior Olympic tournament, which will be forthcoming. And for me, Muge, I had never seen volleyball at that level. You know, we played volleyball in the backyard and, you know, didn't really know many of the rules, how to keep score. I guess score is pretty basic. But anyway, just got to see the camaraderie of this team and how fantastic they were. After every point, whether they won or lose, they kind of huddled together on the court, you know, a quick exchange of, hey, that's great, you know, keep focused. And it was just, it was really inspiring just to see these young women support each other and also do so well at a young age.
That's amazing. Well, first of all, that sounds like an amazing new experience. And the experience of being part of such high energy in person, mm-hmm. I think is unmatched. The absolute difference between doing something in person versus watching on TV. So I think you just made me think maybe I need to go experience that at some point.
Yes. Because
that's one of the few sports I think I haven't been a spectator to at that level.
Yeah. 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 Next up for me, they're going to do beach volleyball, which my niece is also very good at. And I can't wait to see. It's a totally different game because there's only two people on the court. Of course, they're, you know, running across the sand and that's, I think, even more intense from a competition perspective.
Yeah, I bet with the sand adding additional friction. So I wonder where the beach is at, because as soon as you said beach, I'm like, yeah, that sounds good.
I'll keep you posted.
Yes, please do keep me posted. So speaking of being a spectator to a sport, Brad, my husband and I experienced our first official golf tournament about a week ago in Houston. We have never been to a golf tournament as a spectator before. This was a Father's Day present from last June. So we went to Houston Open, which is held in Houston, apparently almost every year. And it was, who knew in our backyard? I'm like, that's easy. I think we could drive here. And it was an amazing experience. We just didn't know what to expect. How does this work? So we got this thing called Venue Hopper, which apparently meant you have access to three different stands by three different holes, and you have access to food, amenities, shade. You can hang out there or you can follow the player of your choice. We have done a little bit of both. It was just a great, purposeful way of being outside, walking, cheering, and I learned a lot. I did not even know who is in this tournament. So I asked a couple young men sitting next to me. I said, do you know anyone famous is playing here? I don't recognize any of the players. They said, well, this is kind of a big tournament. Actually, world's number one Scottie Scheffler is here. I'm like, I knew that. That name is familiar. So I learned a lot. It was a fantastic day. And it was also nice to see the community come together. So it was sponsored by Texas Children's Hospital, contributed to by MD Anderson. So you got like skin sunscreen everywhere, and they are handing out lip balms and fans. And I'm like, I'm loving this place. So it was a fantastic experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, just to be outdoors, take in the fresh air, you know, see people at the top of their game, and I mean, golf is so wild to watch, and the margins of error, I mean, are just so small. Some of these long putts and crazy chips. Wild.
Yes, that's exactly right. A lot of shots look absolutely improbable, and then it happens, and you're like, wow, this is defying physics, such skill, such precision. And even at times, something looks easy, and it doesn't work. You're like, oh, that is heartbreaking, because the ball was almost there.
Right.
So it is just amazing. And I guess also tying a little bit into our topic today, learning, recovering, unlearning, moving forward. I mean, all these players have to recover immediately and move on to the next hole. So not easy to do when a bunch of crowds are watching and cameras are recording.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So with that, let's dive into our topic, which I think we both are very excited about. So a little bit about Frank Barrett, who is the author of this article that inspired us. He's a distinguished management professor, and he's known for his innovative work for leadership and jazz improvisation. And I think his experiences, what he's bringing forward, is a reflection of his background, because not only is he an accomplished management professor, but he's also an accomplished jazz pianist. So putting that together, he has looked at the intersection of how the deep improvisational nature of jazz can translate into leadership. And he has authored several influential books, which I love the title of this one, because it kind of mirrors what I tend to experience most of the time, which is Yes to the Mess, and Surprising Leadership Lessons from Jazz, and The Power of Improvisation, Exploring the Lessons of Jazz in Work and Life. So as you were reading that article, Christine, what stood out to you right off the bat? What was stand out for you?
Yeah, a couple things. I think as he explained jazz, and I had heard this once before, there's a great book from a author and a speaker called Natalie Nixon, and she writes this book called The Creativity Leap, and she also was very into the example of jazz. What I didn't know before I read that book, before I listened to this podcast, I was reminded of the fact that jazz musicians come together, and while they'll have a song in mind, that song's never played the same way, because it's an act of responding and reacting to someone who might play a chord a little bit differently. So they're listening to all of the layers of the music. They're listening to their opportunity and being what we call followers, you know, good followers. And I think that's a perfect example of what leaders and great employees should be thinking about as well. I know from my own experience, sometimes I would be quick to just jump in and say, well, hey, have you thought about this? Like, we did this idea before, and maybe sometimes too soon, right? If you're taking the best of everyone at the table, it's good to maybe sit back, listen, react, respond, not be the first one to try and solve something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what strikes me about this is we achieve success and get results behaving and practicing things in a certain way. And then that mm-hmm. becomes our playbook. Mm-hmm. And then we keep wanting to repeat it because it worked for us in the past. And music, sports, all of that is a or any practice where you experience a lot of routines and rituals and you perfect it and refine it and you say, that's me. So, but then you keep repeating that without regard for what could be different, then, you know, we are potentially missing out on the opportunity to change and adapt, especially in this particular era that we are in, where change is around us constantly, being able to unlearn and also being able to shift between being a leader and a follower is really game changing. And it is really hard to do because I think it pushes you out of your comfort zone, and it may even create doubt, stress, and insecurity because you are not doing what you're accustomed to doing. But what is the benefit of that? The benefit of being able to come up with new approaches, constantly learning, practicing, and thriving in a different way. So when we look at that, Christine, have you experienced this personally in your life where you had to unlearn, maybe sort of let go of the past practices in a particular discipline and come up with a new way, either inspired by yourself or those around you?
Yeah, I think a lot about the time when I was doing a lot of merger and acquisition work for Microsoft, and we had, you know, tight deadlines and trying to figure out how do you bring this technology, how do you bring the people over, you know, quickly and start being productive on behalf of the company. And so we did have a playbook that we used quite often, but I think there was a moment of unlearning when we did the LinkedIn acquisition, which was very different than some of the other acquisitions we did. And in that situation, I think we listened and learned a lot more from what had been working successfully in that business, tried to make sure we didn't lose that secret sauce of what was making the users on that platform so happy and engaged. So I think that was definitely a time that I reflect on that was more about a new playbook and taking more from something that had already existed rather than what had worked for us in the past.
What a great example. What a great example. I am experiencing this as well very much. I moved to a new job recently within Microsoft to lead our sustainability team in Americas. Our job is to help our customers with their data and analytical needs in the way that they report their environmental footprint. It's an emerging capability category for Microsoft. We are in the second version of the product. And as we take it to our customers, the areas that we felt we are really strong in, sometimes maybe not as much, and some things that we didn't think was as strong actually ends up being a strong point. And we are constantly learning and hearing feedback, and at times it's tough because some are resulting in loss, some are resulting in wins, but we have to continually remind ourselves to learn, move on, adapt, and evolve, essentially. So it is similarity, I think, to somewhat a emerging product category or a startup mindset, because the same playbook is absolutely not going to work. So you have to keep rewriting the playbook. I think it's important to have a playbook and have a structure, a framework, an approach where you're executing with intent, but then be so open to learn not only from wins, but also mistakes.
Absolutely. And taking the time to stop and reflect on those learnings and sharing beyond your team is super important too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that brings me to another point. How can we cultivate that learning mindset? Because a lot of times I think we're excited about the wins, the results, the achievement, as we should, because those are to be celebrated. So when we talk about performance and progress, that typically in our minds result to, you know, achievement, whatever we were going for. But then how can we cultivate a mindset where we are creating the forum to reflect, to learn from mistakes, and to make sure that those insights are also just as valuable in a non-judgmental way, because it is hard to do. It is hard to do.
Yeah, I think one thing, whether you're a leader or an individual contributor or just moving about your daily life, if someone brings you a challenge or a problem, being first, you know, open and receptive to hearing it, but then asking them, do you want me to solution this with you? Do you want me to just listen so you can vent? Or do you want me to solve your problem? Mm-hmm. And then figuring out, okay, where do we go from there? Because if you give people space to kind of germinate the conversation and have the opportunity to really share what's top of mind, I believe the outcomes are going to be, you know, generally better in terms of next steps.
Yeah, very true. And I think you brought up a great point about the power of teamwork and collaboration. It may sometimes be difficult for us to do this all by ourselves, but when we are doing with those we work with, whether it's our family, friends, community, work colleagues. Dr. Barrett in his article has a section on this, right? Teamwork and collaboration. And he tells the story of Miles Davis, obviously very famous jazz musician, where he created the top-selling album that still sells a million records a year called Kind of Blue. But how they recorded that is, the story goes that it was very different from traditional jazz, and I'm not a music person, I'm probably not appreciating this completely, but it was a slower chord progression. So he came into the recording studio and said he wants to try this different approach. Almost fairly quickly, he told his engineer to start recording this new way of making music, which was, you know, a little startling to people around them, which ended up being, you know, the best, one of the best records and a unique album at first take. So, and these musicians had to use all they knew in real time to improvise and catch up with this. I think the particular statement Miles Davis made that Dr. Barrett is calling out, which I love, is if you are not making a mistake, that is a mistake. So I think just taking the pause, thoughtful pause, stepping back, learning from it without fear, or maybe without as much fear as may come to us. I thought that was pretty profound.
Totally, totally. And just think about these musicians. First, they're playing with Miles Davis, right? So it's like, you know, the best of the best. And then he shows them something new, never practiced, and says, okay, it's go time. We're going to record, which means everyone will hear their rawness and being very vulnerable, of course, being talented, wanting to do your best. I bet that was a pretty intense feeling. Yet here, years later, this album is still selling like a million copies a year still. And what an awesome thing for him to really push these musicians to do something new, to make something that's still a gift to so many.
I think, yes, it's amazing. And I cannot even probably fully appreciate the kind of fulfillment that comes with that, but also the growth spurt in a way that it instigates. It seems like you're growing in leaps and bounds when you take an approach like this. It is uncomfortable probably at the same time, maybe having a mindset of, okay, what is the worst that can happen? There's a path to recovery. If it fails, just, you know, repeat, move on, learn and move on. And in this instance, it's just remarkable that creating this album in the first take.
Yeah, totally wild. Totally wild. So I hope you lead your next team meeting with it's a mistake not to make mistakes.
Yes, that's right. And I think I just start playing some jazz in the background to inspire. Actually, we have a team offsite coming up in Chicago. And maybe this does need to be brought up as inspiration, because it really holds true, especially in every field, but even more so in technology, where everything is evolving as we speak. Mm-hmm. Let's touch upon also I think Dr. Baird is calling out as collaborative dynamics. So you mentioned that earlier, Christine, the role of individuals on the team, the role of the leader. I think we may look at leaders to say, hey, you know, you set the tone, you create the forum, you lead, we follow. At the same time, though, I think everyone can be a leader in their own right and contribute to the outcome, the forum. I think the importance of active participation, collaboration, and contribution, kind of effective followership. It's sometimes easy to just sit back, watch for it to unfold, and then maybe even go in with a criticism or even a negative perspective. But if you haven't actively participated, contributed to shape it to what you want to be, it is hard to be it's hard to be critical. So that all goes back to, I think, something that I am particularly passionate about, which is feedback. I am absolutely the person, you know, you go stay at a hotel, a restaurant, you get a survey, fill those 100% of the time, because you got to give feedback if you are going to affect change. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, this word followership, I had never really heard that word used. Maybe I'm not running in the same circles, but we have so many books on leadership. Have you ever seen a book, How to Be an Effective Follower?
No, not really. I don't think you say, I am a very effective follower, and people are like, well, that's fantastic. We need more of people like you. Right?
I know. Instantly you think sheep. Like,
Right. No, next. Yes, you normally don't see that on anyone's resume. It's all about leader, influencer. Yes, that's right.
Right. But if we're honest with ourselves, and I was thinking about really reflecting on this notion of followership, I think I became a better follower once I was a manager, and then I, you know, went back to an individual contributor role, because you understand a little bit more about what it takes to lead a team and why is that challenging and why things are never the same and, you know, all of that. So I think there's something definitely to be said for being a good follower. And for maybe those who've never been a manager, you know, you're still leading in different ways. You're leading in your family. You might be leading on a sports team. There's ways to draw parallels. And again, just being collaborative and being, you know, someone who is adding to the process, not detracting from the momentum, the opportunity to solve a problem is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I like the bit of expanded and updated notion of effective followership, as it is called in this article, because it's not just about following instructions and executing on a given playbook, but it's also about with the empowerment to improvise, the freedom that you experience with that, that actually brings out potentially your creativity, the best of who you are and what you can do, is also part of that followership mm-hmm. experience with the right leadership in place. So I think the call out on how empowerment and autonomy that can be part of that improvisational approach is something we probably all want to be able to thrive.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is an important point because to what we were talking about earlier, followership is different than just following directions. And specifically what Dr. Barrett says is effective followership involves individuals taking initiative, exercising autonomy, and contributing to their unique talents and perspectives to achieve shared objectives. And that's very different than just, oh, here's the directions, I'm going to follow it. Right.
That's right. I think there's a lot that goes into it. And in order to create the circumstances where improvisation, learning from mistakes and learning in general also requires the foundation of mutual respect and trust. Without those things, it is probably hard to achieve any of this. So I think when in the story of how Miles Davis said, hey, we are going to hit record, I think there was a level of trust, confidence, and respect for the other musicians in the room. He didn't doubt their skills and say, you know, this is the first take of many, let's just give it a go. He just went. Mm-hmm. And the result was amazing.
Yeah. So when you think about this, you know, how do you think leaders can set their teams up for success here? Because a lot of this is cued from the manager, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have to create an area of psychological safety. You know, they have to lead from example. But I'm also thinking in my mind, not lead so much that it's overpowering mm-hmm. and it's only that individual's ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's definitely a tough balance because mm-hmm. You can go in either direction. You can have absolute freedom, but no structure, no shared principles and values where you feel almost not supported. Or it can go totally on the other hand where it is channeled through the leader and everything has to be run by this person. So I think the answer in my mind, the kind of environment we want to be part of is somewhere in between, in the sense that I think we do need some operating principles, minimal structure that outlines our values on how we operate, what we say yes to, and how we learn and how we support one another. But after that is agreed upon, understood, then it's a go time. People need to exercise the freedom, autonomy within the agreed upon structure to do what they are asked to do. And that structure also needs to be subject to change mm-hmm. based on the learning. So I think it's a delicate balance. And that's, not only approaching the team as a whole, but also how to exercise and approach the individuals on the team, because some individuals may appreciate a little more structure, whereas others don't. So that's where I think the improvisation comes into play. But I think, I am a big fan and beneficiary of in my past experiences, just common operating principles, how we work, mm-hmm. how we learn, and then be free to exercise, take action.
Yeah. It is, I think striking that balance is the big, if you nail that, you really open up the door for creativity, you know, having a balance between like wonder and the rigor of the job.
Right? It is hard. As we know, balance is hard in any dimension of life mm-hmm. Because we tend to go to extremes, whether it's exercise, diet, watching shows. Balance is hard, but I think the fine tuning of that and having that adaptive mindset mm-hmm. It can help towards that. And I think at the end of all of that, which I appreciate, particularly today's podcast, just thoughtful pause to see what are we doing, why are we doing it, how are we doing it, and approach it as a community, as a team, to the extent possible.
Yeah, yeah. Staying curious, right? Because I think curiosity is the engine that drives creativity.
Yes, and learning.
And learning, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's right. So lot to reflect on here as we approach the end of our podcast today. Christine, what do you think some of our key takeaways are for our listeners?
Yeah, I think, well, for sure, we're going to post the link to the original 20-minute discussion with Frank Barrett, so our listeners can go deeper on that and get and form their own impressions. And I think after listening and after hopefully we provoke some thoughts here is being more aware and thinking, am I being a great accompanist to some of these ideas? As a leader, am I creating space for new ideas to be brought forward, to test, to grow, to ensure that, you know, people feel safe trying things in a growth mindset way? And I think the other resource that I mentioned is the book by Natalie Nixon, Creativity Leap. And I found it to be really helpful. I read it 4 years ago, but I think it still is very is a great resource for anyone who wants to go deeper on this topic.
That's awesome. And I think a little homework and reflection for all of us is, where can we improvise more in our lives and create that space with a little pull to say, okay, how are things going? How can we adapt?
Yes.
How can we do better? We probably can do that. And letting go of some of the fears of failure. So we can really go be the best that we can be in any dimension that we care. So it's continuous practice. It really is, I think.
Right, right. And we mentioned Kind of Blue, the Miles Davis album. I think it would be good for our listeners just to take a listen to that amazing piece of music and art and soak it in and get some inspiration from that as well.
Yeah, that's a great call out. That's a great call out. We talked a little about jazz. I think we need to give that a listen. And maybe not only listen at home, but we may even seek out a live performance at some point somewhere, which would be also nice. Awesome. Thank you, Christine, for being my awesome co-host today on this topic. And thank you for listening. Till the next time.
Till the next time.
Thank you for listening. Our hope is to spark a little joy, inspire, and educate our listeners in ways to live an even more meaningful life. If you have reactions to share from what you've heard, please visit our website, refirement.life, to leave a voice message. You may even be featured in a future episode. To keep in touch, subscribe to our podcast, Refirement Life, using the podcast player of your choice. Always remember, you are never too old to set a new goal or to dream a new dream. Thanks again for joining us on this episode. Until next time.